Hello, everybody, and welcome again to Nerd to the Third Power, your one-stop shop for all things nerdy and awesome. I'm your host, Master of Ceremonies, Dr. Gonzo. Kat is still in transit to the studio. She's kind of caught in traffic, but she'll be here as soon as possible. But Skyblaze, how are you doing this week?
I'm alive, and I've got quite a lot of work done this week, so I'm quite pleased with myself.
Good, good, good. And Mike, how are you doing?
I'm motherfucking awesome!
I'm good.
Ow, my ears.
Alright, okay, well, I'm glad. High spirits.
I bring the hype, man. I bring the hype.
Alright, well, we got a fun show for you guys this week. This week, we are finally putting the cap on our on Voltron Legendary Defenders. Season 8, which is the final season, has been out for a while now, and we have followed this strange and wonderful journey from beginning to end. So when Kat gets in, me and her are going to look over season 8 and give our final thoughts on the series. So, but until then, there is procedure to follow, and we are going to begin with Ask a Geek. And before we get into this week's question, there is a point of order that must be addressed. A couple weeks ago, we had a question on what is the craziest dice that we've ever seen that I did not credit the person who sent that question in. So I'm very sorry, Tina. Thank you very much for your question. Love to hear more from you. Okay. So for this week's questions, first one we've got here is from frequent offender Bima Backus, and he asks, after listening to the Kingdom Smash episode, what characters for Smash or world for Kingdom Hearts do you most want to see introduced? So let's see, I think I'll go ahead and start on this one. Characters for Smash. Okay, so I'm gonna limit myself to the rules that the pattern has been established by Nintendo so far, which is all I'm going to limit myself to only characters who've appeared on Nintendo consoles. So I'm going to get the obvious one for me out of the way. I would love to see Geno from Super Mario RPG be made into a fighter. I was really disappointed that the leak that came out late last year wasn't real. I think the leak had Geno. It had Shadow the Hedgehog, which Skyblaze, I know Tony was kind of
yes.
How many pints of ice cream did he go through when it was discovered that was fake?
He was very sad. he was like, I'm going to go over here and listen to some angsty music now.
How could this happen to me? you know who I actually think would make a mechanically interesting character? And it would work really well, especially considering the HD version of the game is either just come out for Switch or is coming soon. But Amaterasu from Okami, I think, would be an interesting fighter for Smash Brothers.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. What about you, Mike? Keeping to the same rules as have been set down, who's a character that you think would work well for Smash?
Well, because I'm that troll guy, Goku. But in a serious answer, I want the Dragonborn from Skyrim. I think that'd be friggin' awesome.
I see. As big a Skyrim fan as I am, I would ordinarily say yes, but I'm gonna have to kind of disagree with that, because like there's already like 100 sword users. Although yeah. in a similar vein. I got my buddy Hambone, the guy who made that Ninja Star dice I told you about a couple weeks ago. He thinks it would be hysterical if the Chosen Undead from Dark Souls was a fighter now that Dark Souls is on the Switch.
Yeah, that'd be pretty legit. In terms of Kingdom Hearts, well, I found out that Tron's already a thing, so I don't know. I'm trying to think here what might be kind of neat. Maybe someone from Princess and the Frog, because I love that movie. So
that's just New Orleans.
Yeah, or Princess Tiana would be my pick.
You know what I want? I'm sorry.
I really want Dr. Facilier as a villain in Kingdom Hearts.
You know what I want? I want the world from The Black Cauldron. That movie needs a lot more love than it got.
Oh, yes. And the fact that it does have such a dark tone would actually fold quite well into like a later level of Kingdom Hearts.
And have Gurgi get possessed by a Heartless so that I can just wail on him for a few minutes. I don't even need a reward. Just give him regenerating health and just let me beat on him for a few minutes. Because as much as I love that movie, I will admit, Gurgi like just brought the whole thing down. All right. What about you, Skyblaze? Any other worlds for Kingdom Hearts or characters for Smash you'd like to see? I mean, I guess it's just Kingdom Hearts, because you don't play Smash, do you?
Not a huge amount. I have played it, but mostly at parties when I've been quite drunk. There's a friend of mine, my friend Nova, he likes to do the thing where everybody plays Pikachu and the items drop all the time, and it's always the Pokemon Stadium. And it gets completely mental. It's referred to as the Pokepocalypse. Apparently it's a thing, and he thinks it's hysterically funny.
Okay.
My friends are weird. I don't know what to tell you.
Look, I'm not going to judge. I've just revealed that I have a friend who we call Hambone, so... You know,
that makes me think of the time you called me Ham Solo.
Anyway, continue.
I think Emperor's New Groove might be a fun one.
Ooh.
Yeah, Yzma as a Kingdom Hearts villain might be cool.
Nice.
There were also rumors at one point. I think it was actually Datamined. They in Kingdom Hearts 3D, I think. They were going to have if Datamined the ship from Treasure Planet.
Ooh, see, I was I would also want to see that in Kingdom Hearts, but I want it to replace the Gummy ship.
That's interesting.
Well, I mean, think about it. It would fit.
That's true.
I'm sorry, I just really hate the fucking Gummy ship. I'm gonna be that guy. Looping back to Smash Brothers, because I've been playing a lot of Xenoblade Chronicles 2, character that I will be, like, very disappointed if they don't, and I know they're probably not going to make it into this game, but I'm going to be very disappointed if they're not in the next. I want Pyra and Mithra to be playable fighters.
Guaranteed by the end of the year. Guaranteed.
See, I don't think so, because here's the thing. Pyra already shows up as a spirit in Ultimate. And Sakurai historically has not wanted to double dip. It's the same reason why I don't think Geno is going to be a character, because he's also a spirit. So, because like I said, Sakurai historically has not liked double dipping with characters. So, if he does, I will be like totally amazed and surprised, and I will love him forever more than I already do. But I don't think we're going to see any Xenoblade Chronicles 2 characters in Smash Ultimate. But, you know, we didn't think we were going to see any Persona 5 characters in Smash Ultimate and then That's Game true. Awards. So, I guess anything...
Oh, I just thought of another thing that they could do in Kingdom Hearts. Puzzle the Great Mouse Detective.
That would be pretty badass, actually.
That would be quite... I mean, obviously you can't get the original voice of Rattigan now, but still.
Yeah, my first instinct, because I'm not a huge fan of the Great Mouse Detective, would be to disagree. But then I think about that clock tower scene, like, yeah, no, that'd be epic as fuck.
Yep, yep, yep. Yep.
Okay. All right. So thank you for your question, Bhima. And let's see here. Next question here comes from Katie. And she asks what our thoughts on the new DuckTales series are. And I this question was very well timed, because season 2, of course, has been going on. And also, I don't know if you guys saw me flipping out about this last week.
The moon
thing. Yeah.
It was all over my feed. Everyone was talking about it.
For those who don't know what we're referring to. Which should be none of you, because the moon theme has been our theme music for like 7 years now. The new DuckTales series, in one of the most recent episodes that dealt with Della Duck on the moon, she actually sings the moon theme as a lullaby with lyrics and everything. And, you know, we're all just completely nerding out over here over it. Me personally, I haven't been watching season 2 yet, because I don't have cable at my new house. I do have some catching up to do. I loved season 1, though. Absolutely adored it. I love that they've drawn so much inspiration from the Carl Barks comics. And I'm really excited to see what they do with season 2.
It's probably one of the better reboots or reimaginings I could have possibly hoped for. I think Disney really did a fantastic job with it. If you really want to impress me, give me another Goof Troop with Max as the father and Goofy as the grandfather, and I'd be down for that.
You know what? Speaking of Goof Troop and Kingdom Hearts, see me after the show. Let me tell you about my headcanon about what Max has been up to over the events of Kingdom Hearts.
There's quite a lot of headcanons were kicking around and fanfics kicking around where he's like a cadet in the guards, which is kind of cute.
So, yeah. So, yeah, I'm absolutely loving it. Skyblaze, have you...
Sorry, you cut off. I didn't hear what you said.
I said, have you been following the new DuckTales at all?
I don't actually know if there's a way for me to legally watch it over here.
Can you buy the episodes off of iTunes?
I could, but that would involve me using iTunes, and I would rather stab forks in my eyes.
But it is legal.
But it does involve giving money to Apple, and screw that.
True.
Mike, just let this sleep. Let this. Don't go poking that bear, Mike. There's
Twitch.
There's
Twitch.
There's a lot of history there that doesn't need to be dug up. So, thank you, Katie, for your question. And let's see here now. There was another one here that I wanted to bring up. I seem to have lost it. Let me dig it up again. Okay, this question comes from Ryan, and he asks, I realize that interest in My Little Pony Friendship is Magic may have lapsed, but I'm curious how you guys feel about the news that this impending season will be its final season. I'm going to say my interest has not waned at all. I'm still a huge brony. In fact, I've actually got pre-orders in for those new Cotobukiya Equestria Girls figures that were announced late last year. Mike, have you seen these?
Yeah, they look incredible, and I wish I had space to display something like that, because they are nice sculpts.
Yeah, I've already got the Pinkie Pie on pre-order. Once the Twilight Sparkle comes out, I'm gonna have the same. I've actually got a full set of the Funko vinyl MLP statues. But anyway, putting the train back on the tracks. Season 9 being the last season, I actually don't have a problem with that. I would rather see the show, because the show's maintained a pretty consistent quality throughout, and I would rather see it go out while it's still pretty close to the top of its game than have it do like a Simpsons or a SpongeBob and just, you know, perpetuate
spin
into mediocrity.
Wheels. Yeah. Yeah. My feelings on this, you know what? The show has accomplished a lot of things. It's become a cultural icon in the time that it's been on the air. To say I'm a huge brony, well, I was on Comic Book Men for it. I have a tattoo of Derpy Hooves on my left arm. You might say that I like the show. But I'm with Gonzo in this. I'd rather see it go out in the top of its game, in the top of its storytelling and form, than just spin its wheels into mediocrity.
All right. Skyblaze, what about you?
I think the more recent seasons, the quality of the writing has not been as impressive, and it's ceased making the impact that it used to do. It's become a bit formulaic. I mean, previous seasons, it seemed to take delight in kind of subverting tropes and turning things on their head and not going in the kind of proscripted, this is what the moral is sort of way. And more recent ones have kind of done that, with some exceptions. So I think the fact that it is winding down and they're saying, like, this is what we're doing, this is what it's going to be, instead of, as you say, trying to just dig it, squeeze more and more money out of it until it's beating a dead horse. I think it's a good thing that they've said, okay, we've gone as far as we want to go with this at the moment. Let's end it on a high note.
Okay. And Kat, hey, glad to see you managed to make it. It doesn't seem like the Knolls gave you much trouble this week.
No, I managed to survive my journey, arduous though it may have been, and here I am.
All right, we just got a couple more Ask Geek questions here, and then we'll go ahead and get started with our main discussion topic. And Mike, Ryan's got another one here that actually this is one I'm interested to hear from both you and Skyblaze on.
Okay.
And the question is, have you heard about the Ecto-1 transport that is being promoted in a crossover comic? The premise is that he teams up with the classic Ghostbusters to capture Starscream's undying spark.
Yes, I have checked this out, and actually I want to give acknowledgement to my lovely wife who pre-ordered this toy for me the second it became available. So looking forward to getting that. Some of the artwork has already been previewed out on Twitter. They got Megatron meeting... Gozer is like, choose the form of the Destructor. Welcome, Cybertron. And I'm like, holy shit. This is awesome. And some of the artwork, you see Starscream's ghost. You see Kremzeke, which is this energy being like, jumping out all over the place, which is really cool. I think this is going to be a fantastic crossover. IDW, I think, is the publisher behind this one.
Yeah.
And
yeah, they've got the license at the moment.
Yeah, they typically don't do crap material with their licensed stuff. I very rarely read a bad IDW book. So I buy most of my comics digital. I'll probably end up buying this one as well.
All right, Skyblaze, have you been following this at all? I know you're more of a Transformers fan than a Ghostbusters fan.
Yeah, I have some Transformers fans who are on my social media feed, so I have seen about this. As Mike said, IDW tend to do fairly decent stuff, and the crossovers they've done previously have actually been pretty decent. They're not perfect because nobody is, but they have done good stuff in the past. And the fact that they've kind of taken this fan theory about Starscream's undead spark and run with it is just hysterically funny to me. Because there are so many things that, like, anything, any supernatural kind of TV show or comic or video game that deals with ghosts will inevitably have a fan crossover with Transformers where Starscream's ghost is involved. So it's fun that they're doing this as well. The model itself, I'm a little less sure because it looks a bit clunky. But then if they're going for the kind of G1 aesthetic, I can kind of understand why.
Alrighty. Okay. And Kat, we got a question here. This one is from Ricky. And he asked you, if you were to assign Dungeons & Dragons classes to your castmates, what would they be?
Oh,
so I'm interested to hear your answer.
Oh, God. Oh, no. Oh, no. I want to...
Gonzo's clearly a warlock.
Really?
I would have went wizard, probably, but I can see warlock, too.
No, warlock.
Mm-hmm. See, Mike I would have put as our wizard.
Yeah, I can see that.
Skyblaze. Oh my god. I mean, you already own every weapon. So you're definitely like some sort of melee fighting unit. Probably. I'll go ahead and say Skyblaze is probably an Eldritch Knight.
Oh, cool. I live with that.
And Gonzo. Yeah, Gonzo is probably a warlock because I would 100% believe that he has made a pact with the Great Old One.
You see?
Yeah, I can see that now.
More like he's made a pact with me.
I rest my case, Your Honors.
All right, and so that's the three of us. What would your class be?
God, whatever's the most tired.
Druid.
Okay, the henchman it is,
yeah,
then.
Yeah, no, because, like,
Druid, I'm calling Druid.
I'd like to say, a bard, but no, yeah, Skyblaze is right, it's probably a druid. Druids get...
You could turn into a cat, it would be brilliant.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, it's just turning into a cat and falling asleep.
This is totally off topic, but that actually reminds me of a conversation that I had with a friend of mine who he was watching me surf Facebook over my shoulder, and one of your posts about your cats actually came up, and is this friend of yours a crazy cat lady? And I was like, well, she's crazy, she has cats, she's a lady, and her name is Cat. So on a semantic level, yes, but she does not have the sufficient number of felines to qualify in the traditional sense.
True. I don't own enough cats. Sorry, not enough cats own me.
Correct.
And poor Drake is getting kind of up there in years. And he's on a lot of medication, so we're kind of like, I don't know what's going to happen to this boy. But I did get a picture from my mother the other day of him sitting in the tulips. And he has this thing about, it's daffodils. When the daffodils bloom, he goes and sits on all of them and crushes them. And it's
That's so
very
weird.
Cute and destructive. And he's already, like, they haven't even bloomed yet, and he's already trying to crush his mortal enemy.
All right, so that's
that's the party familiar then.
Yes.
Alrighty. Okay, so that's all the Ask Geek questions that we have for this week. Thank you, as always, for sending them in. As always, you can send them to us through the email at drgonzo@nerdofthethirdpower.com. We love getting your questions, love reading them on the air. So get your questions in. You just might get your question read on the air. And so with that, we're going to jump right into the meat of our of this episode, which is Voltron Season 8, the final season of Voltron Legendary Defender. We have been following this show from the beginning, and now here we are at the end, and my God, what a ride it has been.
It was definitely something.
Yeah, it has definitely... This has definitely been one of the best animated shows I've seen in a time. And, you know, coming from a generation that grew up on Batman the Animated Series and later stuff like Avatar the Last Airbender and Transformers Prime, that's a high bar to clear. So, yeah, this is coming from someone who didn't even like Voltron before we started this show. So that's even more impressive that it's made me a Voltron nut. Let's just jump right into it. So Kat, what are your general thoughts on season 8?
Well, I mean, it has been a couple months at this point since season 8 came out, so we're talking about it a little bit late because we were on break when it came out. So
like all the previous seasons, it just came up out of nowhere and we had no idea it was coming.
It really did. So we'll probably start talking about it, and now remember more things that I wanted to talk about like 2 months ago. Overall, it was a good, solid season. It had a huge chunk of backstory that we had been kind of like, when is this going to happen? What's going on? There was one or two things I was a little disappointed with, but otherwise, on the whole, like very on par with previous seasons in its quality.
Okay, see, I went into season 8 kind of worried, because if you go back and you listen to our season 7 show, that really felt like they could have stopped the show there, and it would have been a satisfying ending. So, like, I didn't really see how they could raise the stakes from there. And in a way, they did, and in a way, they also didn't. In a way, they kind of both raised the stakes and also kind of pared them back a bit, because this definitely felt like a much more personal and character-based story in season 8 than the war story that was season 7. I was definitely worried going into the season, but you know, it ultimately turned out to be another great season, and I loved it. Like, you know, there were some things that I would have done differently, but you know, we'll get into that. But it was definitely a fitting cap to this series, and I was really happy with how it ended. And yeah, so we're just gonna go ahead and get right into it, and we will start by discussing the overall plot of season 8, and I'll go ahead and give the summary on this one. So season 8 picks up a few weeks after season 7, when the Galra were driven off of Earth, and we found this mystery Altaian pilot in the badass Voltron kicking mech of Doom that appeared at the end of last season. So Earth is kind of recovering and starting to take its place in the galactic society, and the Atlas is preparing to go out into the universe with Team Voltron in tow to take on the larger Galra Empire. And Allura is kind of worried about the role the Altaian plays in the greater scheme of the Galra plans. And the first episode actually takes place on Earth and is probably it's an episode that I had two very different reactions watching it as it went through, because the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, you know, this is so great, this is so cute, because Lance finally nuts up and asks Allura out on a date, and they go out and have dinner with Lance's family, and then they go walking in the park, and Lance confesses feeling, and it's all wonderful and cute and adorable. But then the second time you watch it, when you know what happens, by the way, spoilers, it's like, oh God, this is so heartbreaking, and it destroys me. So they set out from Earth to take on the Greater Galra Empire. Meanwhile, Hagar, who we learned last season, I think it was last season, the season 4, her real name is Onerva, has now assumed control of the Empire, but she kind of doesn't really want it. She has her own agenda involving bringing back her family, the Emperor Zarkon and her son Lotor. And to that end, she travels to the, I can't remember the name of it, the planet where they where Lotor and Alea went. Alea. I'm getting tongue tied. So she travels to that Altaian temple that Lotor and Allura went to learn the secrets of Altaian alchemy, and basically absorbs all of its power. And it's revealed that her plot ultimately is to travel between realities to find a reality where she can live happily with her complete and still living family, or failing that, just take an eraser to the whole of existence. And we get a lot of revelations as to where, as to, you know, character motivations and what the nature of some of these characters that we have come to expect over the last several years, seasons, kind of get subverted. And as we learn things about them, they kind of change our perception on these characters in some ways, you know, becoming more sympathetic to them. And in other ways, we're just like, wow, you're a rat bastard and you should die. So it's definitely a much more character focused season in this story. And so yeah, we'll just that's kind of a general plot synopsis. So Kat, what did you think of the story of this season?
I felt it was kind of almost convoluted. And that just really stems from there's a lot of like reality bending stuff going on. That kind of makes it hard to fully understand, okay, what's going on? Where are we at? Is this reality? Is this real? Like, there's a lot of trippy shit that happens that I thought it made it a little bit harder to follow this season. But otherwise, I really liked that it was scaled down a little bit more, because when you have a series like Voltron, where the plot is space wars, and everything is on a galactic level, and they've almost ended reality multiple times. It's nice over war, like a war with like fleets and armies and stuff. It's nice to bring it down, even though, you know, the universe and reality are still in danger, but it's way more personal, like you were saying before. It's much more of a character study for a season, and less of a just straight up, we're trying to save the universe, because Voltron are the defenders of the universe. But it's nice to have it just brought down, and it's basically a whole season that's about Anerva/Hagar and Allura. And that's kind of what it boils down to, are these two very different women and their ability to tap into certain powers, how those powers affect them and their motivations and the things that they're aiming for and the choices that they make.
Yeah, and I like that Allura got a fair bit of focus this season, because, I mean, it's understandable why her character development kind of got sidelined last season, because, you know, where they're on Earth, it's about the Earth Paladins and the B-Team who show up again in this season. So it's kind of understandable that Allura and Karan kind of got sidelined that season. But prior to that, you know, Allura's character development kind of came in sort of bits and spurts, and, you know, she didn't really get a whole lot a whole lot of time where the camera was actually focused on her. And I like that we actually got to get more of a glimpse into her head this season than we did in previous seasons. And I really liked how this season played up sort of the parallels between her and Anerva, because these are two characters who, they have a lot of the same desires and the same wants, but they have almost polar opposite reactions to their circumstances and how they approach those desires. You know, these are two people who both want to see their home restored in some fashion. But whereas Allura is kind of like, okay, yes, my home is gone. Yes, that sucks. And yes, I'd like to see it brought back, but that can't be done at the expense of the greater universe. Anerva is just like, look, if I can't have my family back, then, you know, the rest of you can just fuck off and die.
Yeah, so I thought the season was really good about paralleling those two, and it was almost a season just about those two when it came down to it. Obviously, everybody's in it, and a lot of stuff happens outside of them, but it really kind of felt like, hey, these two characters are finally getting the amount of focus that they so rightfully deserve.
That said, there were some things that I thought were kind of some strange choices that I thought were made this season. Again, you know, there's always the filler episodes, which this season, I think the only real filler episode was the Clear Day episode where they go to the carnival.
Oh yeah,
I felt like that aside from the whole B plot of Allura and the creature of darkness, I felt like that whole episode was just completely unnecessary. Although, you know, I will say it did give me some more funny moments of Pidge interacting with her family, which I would love to have seen more of that, because Pidge gets two moments where she kind of butts heads with her mother. One is in the very first episode where we find out that she's been grounded for running off and gallivanting about the galaxy without permission. And she's like, well, I would have thought that going out and saving the Earth and the entire universe would have gotten me a pass. And her mother's like, nope. And then in the Clear Day episode, you know, Pidge is going to her mother for some more tokens, you know, to win a prize as a present for Allura. And they enter in this, like, you know, hostage negotiation scene. It was like, oh, okay, I'll give you these tokens, but I want a picture. Okay, but I get to pick the costume. Okay, but you have to smile. And I love that. I would love to see a spinoff of just like shorts where it's just like Pidge butting heads with her mother. That would have been great.
Yeah, that would have been good. I've never really been a fan of the filler episodes, like, period. I've always thought that they just detract from the season. They're usually quite enjoyable, but I find them very disruptive, and you know, as the seasons got shorter and the stakes got higher, it just felt out of place to have them. So, like, once again, here we go, here's another one. We just don't need them.
Yeah,
and that was not one of my favorite, like, the D&D one I'll forgive because it was fucking D&D, but
The D&D one also gave us insight into the characters, whereas this one was just kind of, again, like I said, the Allura plot aside, just kind of there. Another one that I was really disappointed in, because I was really hoping it was going to give us some more insight into the B team, was the documentary episode, which I just did not like that episode at all.
Oh, I kind of liked that one. I remember liking that one. Yeah. It was different in terms of formatting. It was different in terms of pacing. You know, it was like, I think they should have, if they were going to do something like that, done that in the previous season, would have been more appropriate. Because again, like, with this being the last season and the stakes being so high, like, they should have nailed every episode. Like, there's no reason why any episode should have been worth less than every other episode. So to me, it was really not right to have a filler episode or to have an offshoot episode. Yeah. Unless it was like 100% contributing to the story, and if it made sense, and whatever.
Yeah,
can't change it now.
Yep. And I'll tell you something else that I thought was done really well this season, and that's actually the relationship between Lance and Allura finally getting its wheels on the ground and getting rolling. And I liked seeing the two of them interact and actually go into this relationship, but at the same time the relationship didn't overpower the overall story, which is something that you see happen so many times in these stories when they introduce a romance subplot where it kind of becomes a tumor and just eats everything else. But I really liked seeing, you know, Lance trying to be, you know, it's clear that he doesn't really understand everything that Allura is dealing with over the course of the season. But I like that, you know, he's just trying to be there to be supportive and help her through it in any way he can. And I love how his voice actor puts, I don't know, maybe this is me reading too much in the performance, but it really felt like the voice actor was kind of putting into this, look, I don't know what the hell's going on, but I'm here if you need me, kind of thing. I don't know. Am I the only one who saw that?
No, I think you're right. I think Lance, of all people, has a certain practicality to him, considering he is the more egotistical, boastful character. His maturity levels in the later seasons are very practically based. He gets what he can and can't do, where he does and doesn't belong, and what he does and doesn't know. And him and Allura's relationship is very much like what you just said. It's like, hey, I'm not the expert on this. If you need me, I'm here. He's just like trying to be supportive and everything. And I think they do a really good job with the relationship while it lasts.
You know, you brought up something that I hadn't even thought of, and that's I think part of the reason why I like the Lance and Allura arc this season is because Lance finally drops that boastful act and finally just gets real with her.
Yeah, and to me, Lance has had probably the most subtle character development. It happened over the course of several seasons of him slowly, you know. Like, he just stops trying to force himself into a position or into an archetype or a role for himself, you know, and just starts being who he needs to be rather than who he wants to be. Because he wants to be a main character hero that all the girls adore and everything. And he's just not that guy. He's more of a supportive character. And that's what he slowly finds out over the course of all these seasons. And it's really nice. That he doesn't have like the Keith angst episodes or like half a season of angsting over not knowing what to do with himself. He comes to the realization of what is needed from him. And even if it's not always easy at times, he accepts that and does what he needs to do and is who he needs to be.
Now, a set of characters that I wish that we had gotten to see more of this season. We've already mentioned the B team, who I would have loved to have seen more done with them this season, but also Aksha, who until her spotlight episode, I'd completely forgotten was even part of the team now. And she gets one episode where she's the focus character about adjusting to, you know, being on the Atlas and running into her old general buddies. And then the whole thing is she just kind of disappears. And I really wish that they had done more with her because I you know, we saw hints of her story potential in the previous season. And I feel like they didn't really do anything to really make that pay off this season.
I agree. Particularly because that, was it a trio of them? Aksha, or was there three or four who were Lotor?
There were four generals, but one of them got killed because it was because Lotor found out that she, all the generals are female, that she was a mole for Hagar.
Right. Okay. So then the three of them that were left alive after that were very interesting, extremely fun characters for side characters, and they really had an Avatar: The Last Airbender vibe to them. They really made you think of. Azula, Mei, and
Ty Lee.
That's who I think of when I think of them. And they definitely were a lot of fun to watch, and they had a lot of story potential, but you never really understood what the hell they were about. Because they were just getting passed back and forth between, we work for Lotor, but we'll go ahead and for you and we'll fight you and whatever. Like there wasn't a lot of direction for these guys, and that was sort of a little bit disappointing because it felt like they were just there to be hired thugs when they actually had a lot of character and personality, and we get to see a little bit of it but not a lot of it. And Aksha was obviously like the exception, but again, like, we just don't get enough of her.
Okay. What's something else that stood out to you, good or bad, this season?
Well, we could talk about the ending.
Well, we can have to set up some context for that. So, basically, as we mentioned in Ops, Anerva's ultimate plan is if she can't find a universe where she can be happy, then no universe can exist. So she basically goes to destroy all of reality. And in the latter half of the season, they kind of do this. I don't even really know how to describe it. They go inside her head, which I didn't really understand the science or the technobabble behind it. But somehow or other, the Voltron team winds up going into Unerva's memories. And it's there that they encounter specters of the original Paladins, including a pre-quintessence addicted Zarkon, who has his "My God, what have I done?" moment. And then they band together to discover what Unnerva's ultimate plan is. And then they do this kind of smackdown outside the skin of reality, where Unnerva is destroying the different threads of reality and basically just trying to destroy reality itself. And the whole thing culminates with Allura and Unnerva basically sacrificing themselves and kind of, I guess, merging with the quintessence to recreate reality and repair all the damage. So while the universe and indeed all universes are saved, Allura has essentially ascended to a higher plane of existence. At least that's how I interpreted it. So yeah, that's how that got resolved. So what did you think of that that thread?
First off, the interacting with the old paladins, including Zarkon, was killer. It was so good. Like, Zarkon is such an interesting character. When you can strip away his insanity, and you see him prior to him getting corrupted by the quintessence, he's a really cool character. Because he was, like, a nice guy once, and we got to see his descent into darkness, so to speak, in previous way back ago seasons. So it was nice to bring back that version of Zarkon and to see him interacting with the other paladins and the new paladins, and it was really cool, and I really liked it. And there was a lot of teamwork makes the dream work.
Did you just make that up, or have you been hanging on to that for a while?
No. It's something we used to say at my old work.
Okay.
So, you know, that was such a treat that we finally got to see that level of discovery of this old crew and everything. It's really cool.
We even got some development for Lotor, too, because we got to see some flashbacks of him growing up.
True. Very true. We did get to see a lot of Lotor, like a whole episode of Lotor flashbacks, I think. There was one part where I was super confused about whether or not Lotor came back in an episode.
Yeah, you're talking about the one where they brought back his mech from the Between Realities bit, and it lay the smackdown of Ultron. I interpret that as that's one of the things I was kind of disappointed with, because I interpret that as like Lotor was actually back, because you actually have Unnerva talking to him, and there's actually a shot where you see the mech open and you kind of see Lotor's body in the mech, and it looks like something's been done to it, like it's mutated in some fashion. But then it's never brought up again. We never see it again. We never get any kind of interaction with actual Lotor. Like, he shows up in as kind of a hallucination to Allura in that one filler episode, and then we get the flashbacks. But the actual Lotor, we never see again. And I was really disappointed that, because I would have loved to have seen kind of interactions between Lotor and Unnerva now that, you know, she's regained her memories and knows that this is her son. But like I said, it's kind of picked up for shock value and then dropped again. And I was really disappointed with that.
Yeah. I was so confused after that, because I had been betting on Lotor coming back, because we didn't see him die on screen. Ergo, probably not really dead. just in, you know, terms of filmmaking. So when he came back, I was like, I fucking knew it. I saw his mech and I was like, I knew he was going to come back. And then they never touched it again. I'm like, did I hallucinate that? And I saw the season twice, basically. And they never came back to it. And I was so confused about, well, did they just bring his mech back and not him? Or was it him and he was a zombie? Or was it like something that got erased when reality was getting unspooled, or what? But they never talked about it ever again. So, like, to me, that was like, it was completely pointless.
And they try and have it both ways, because you see his body and it's implied that he's still alive in some fashion. But then he shows up as a ghost with the old paladins at the end, when they're like, okay, we got to fix reality now. So it almost was like they wanted to have their cake and eat it too in regards to his status of alive or dead.
Yeah, so that was like, again, like one of the things, the warping of reality made a lot of stuff very confusing this season and hard to follow. And that was like one of the things that really stuck with me afterwards, because I am a tremendous LOTOR fan. And it was like, it's really bothering me that they didn't clarify. But yeah, once they get to the end, and Allura is gone. And that broke my fucking heart.
Yeah, mine as well.
Like, it was really harsh, and I didn't think that they would do something like that. I would have predicted maybe Anarva sacrificing herself, but not Allura. And I would have predicted Shiro sacrificing himself, but not Allura. Even though she's 100% the type to do it, I just didn't think in the context of the story that they would do it.
Well, Shiro's already done it, so he's met his quota.
It's true. Keith, also a person who would sacrifice himself. Or maybe even, like, if Lance could do it in her place, he would. But I didn't think that they had the balls to kill her, basically. Because she's, you know, she's the only female main character, first off. So if they wanted to continue...
Well, hang on, there's
Besides Pidge. But Pidge is really, like, non-binary, kind of.
Well, that's debate that can rage in other tables, but yeah.
Yeah. So for them to just off this character, to me, seemed like, wow, you're really not going to do another season, are you? Yikes. Really committed to the, this is it. This is definitely it. Because, and Allura was such a useful character. Like, she had control over so many different things because of her abilities. So it's like, once she's gone, there's a lot that they can't do anymore because they don't have anybody with the same kind of powers as hers. But also the fact that they waited 8 seasons to put her and Lance in a relationship together, and only for it to, like, lead to nothing. And that as a storytelling thing is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant because it's closer to reality in that you don't always get what you want, that happy endings do not come without sacrifices. But as somebody who has been shipping that ship for 8 seasons, I'm furious. Because
yeah, like this is something that has to be said. Is like, you know, it as heartrending as it is to see Allura, you know, kind of see Allura pass on. It has to be pointed out, this isn't a case of them just like stuffing her in a fridge. This is something that the story actually earns and pays off really well, especially with. I find it kind of be the culmination of the character arc between her and Anarva, because one of the things that's revealed after reality is remade and Allura and Anarva have ascended to godhood, as I interpreted it, is Altea has come back. And it's like, you know, I interpret that as like, you know, in their own way, they managed to make both of their desires come true. And I feel like that this was... That Allura and Anarva's sacrifices were handled really well. And like you said, you know, the whole Allura and Lance subplot, I mean, it's like the song says, you can't always get what you want. And, you know, I think if there's one thing that we should have expected going into this season, given what we've seen previous, it's that, you know, the happy ending, we may get a happy ending, but it's never going to be the golden ending.
Yeah. It's sort of like what I'm anticipating for Game of Thrones, where it was bittersweet. Where you know, a lot of good things happened and goals were achieved, but it didn't come without sacrifice. And that was very hard as a fan to watch, because we are so accustomed to watching our happy cartoons and getting a nice happy ending. And Voltron has destroyed our hearts time and time again, and we have never learned. And we came in expecting Allura and Lance are happy together. Goody, they're going to stay that way. How naive we were.
Yeah. And I guess from there, we got to talk about that epilogue and how all the kids adjust to their lives after Paladinhood. Which, this season ends with one of the best, I guess, postscripts that I've seen in a in fiction, because one of the things that really irritates me about a lot of shows that have an ending is like okay, there's the villain dies, there's the big explosion, everybody goes home, has a party, and then that's it, the end. We don't get any kind of hint as to what happens to these characters afterward. And I liked seeing, you know, what all these characters get up to after Paladinhood, like, you know, like Hunt becoming basically the Gordon Ramsay of the galactic diplomacy scene. Or Pidge and her family basically building Vehicle Force Voltron. And I gotta say, I really liked how Lance going back to, again, that arc between him and Allura, how Lance kind of adjusts to, you know, post-Paladinhood and losing the woman he loved, is that, you know, it would be very easy for them to go the route of like, okay, this has just utterly broken him, and so he's gonna go wander the earth or something, or he's going to, you know, just forget about it and, you know, hop onto the next girl. But no, they actually went with like, you know, yeah, I miss her, and it sucks that she's gone, but, you know, she, given what she's accomplished, you know, she wouldn't want me to just, you know, wallow in her loss, but, you know, celebrate the things that we've achieved together. And I love that, I don't know, I thought that moment where he was talking to the school children just to be a very touching moment.
I mean, I cried, but I cried a lot in the last episode. Yeah, I liked that he had the little Altaian markings, and they never explain why. Only that he has these markings, and there's always been like theories throughout pretty much the entire show that he is actually somehow Altaian, and it doesn't really make sense, but it's a cool theory. And so, like, the idea that I feel like the story writers had heard all of these theories and kind of threw that in there as fan service. But him having the little Tain markings, either like as a tattoo or however he got them, just seems like really fun to me as a nice homage to her.
So, and then we got to talk about the lions bouncing at the end of the episode.
Oh,
and,
yeah, I
and
forgot
going
about
off
that.
Into the cosmos.
I had totally forgotten.
Yeah, because that to me was the moment where it was like, yeah, the end moment. And like, and this is where I also get the impression that Allura is not, in the traditional sense, like dead and gone forever, that she's like ascended to some higher plane of existence, because the very last shot of the series is of the lions flying towards this nebula that is shaped like Allura. And so that's where I kind of got the interpretation that she's actually become some kind of like minor goddess or something.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I took away from it at the time as well. I'll keep referring to the show as having killed her in that there, she's not on it anymore. But yeah, I kind of got the feeling that she was going someplace she couldn't return from, and that she wasn't going to, yeah, like, yeah, she was going to become some sort of goddess or something. It's just going someplace or becoming something that makes her completely inaccessible anymore, but she's probably always going to be there in spirit.
Okay, so we're kind of coming down to the last leg of this episode, so let's start wrapping things up. Final general thoughts on Season 8, and indeed on Voltron Legendary Defender itself. So, yeah.
Wow. I'm almost glad that it's over, because now we don't have to, like, sit there and wait for another season. And, sorry, I have a lot of phlegm today. Let me try that again. I mean, wow, what a show and what a season it has been. I'm kind of glad that it's over, so I don't have to like bang my head into a wall waiting for another season and wondering if they're gonna cover this or cover that. At the same time, it's gonna be sad. I mean, like, it ended in a very good way. It ended on a high note. It never felt like it had stayed past its welcome. You know, it's not like, say, Supernatural, where it peaked in season 5, but they've still made, like, 9 more seasons of it. So
only 9?
9 more seasons.
I was about to say, aren't they in like the 30s now?
No. But yeah, it feels like it came and it did what it needed to do, and it's leaving before it overstays its welcome. And if they wanted to do more of it, they probably could, but I don't think it'll get better than what it is now. And I felt like they ended it very well for season 8. There's nothing I'm particularly displeased with, other than that Lotor thing, with them not addressing it again. I'm pretty satisfied with everything, and I'm glad they took the chance to make the show, because we have seen America trying to make Voltron in the past, and it hasn't always worked out to the studio's benefit.
The less said about that CGI show from the early 2000s, the better.
Yeah, and all of that stuff is done here in St. Louis. St. Louis is like the American hometown of Voltron. There's actually a huge Voltron statue that makes its way around to events and stuff. And we love Voltron here. And I love that the new series has made Voltron accessible to a younger generation. It's become just so insanely popular because of these wonderful characters that started with the original show but were modified and sort of modernized and made more accessible for new fans. And the whole show has just been a crazy success, and I'm really glad they took the chance to make it, because it turned out so well for them.
I would call this version of Voltron the ultimate example of a reconstruction, in that it took itself a little more seriously and a little more grounded in reality than, say, the original Voltron show did, but also didn't discard any of the fantastic or the whimsical elements of it, and let itself be a science fiction fantasy show, while still having, you know, the moments of emotional weight and depth. And I really love that the showrunners managed to balance that so well. And I'd also like to point out, this is the second show that I have I've watched solely on your recommendation. The previous one being Avatar: The Last Airbender. So you're 2 for 2 now. the whole reason we started this reviewing Voltron was because Kat wanted to watch it. But it has definitely been a wild ride. And I'm glad that it ended on a high note, that it knew when it was time to bow out, because, like I said, we were kind of worried at the end of season 7. It's like, where do you go from here? And while this was definitely a much, you know, I'm not going to say that this I like this season as much as season 7. Season 7 is still my favorite overall. It was still definitely a great season and a fitting cap to this series. And I'm interested to see what this studio does in the future. Do you think they might do Vehicle Force Voltron?
I honestly don't know that they'll go back to Voltron. I don't think. Yeah. I would not put money on them continuing it. Because it's because it's a Netflix show. If it was something that was getting aired, they would keep making the show and beat the dead horse until it could not do anything else. But because it's a Netflix show and they have a little more control over that sort of thing, I don't think I think they're just going to let it sit and let it be. And hey, they made a successful show. Let's go make something else new. Let's go remake something else new.
Although I did like the vehicle shout out at the end in the epilogue, where you see kind of some of the components in the background with the, you know, saying like, you know, the Holtz started making the next generation of legendary defenders. And correct me if I'm wrong, am I crazy in thinking that the robot Chip that they were building, isn't he a Vehicle Force Voltron character?
I do not know enough about Vehicle Force.
Well, no one really does. I don't think. I think I said before, Vehicle Force, everybody remembers the name of else about it.
I honestly couldn't tell you that that was a Voltron thing and not a Transformers thing. So I take your word. I did not watch nearly enough of the old stuff.
Well, I mean, like I said, I you know, I wasn't a Voltron fan before watching this series, so with that, that just adds another feather to the show's cap. So yeah, that is that's our final Tron Season 8 and a eat of Voltron Legendary Defender. It has been a wild ride, and so let's I guess you know, now that the show is complete, do you think this is something that someone ought to sit down and binge through, Kat?
Oh, hell yeah. Now that it's all done, and considering how short the later seasons are, this would be a good, like, long weekend binge for somebody who's never seen it. So if you are listening somehow still and you haven't seen it, this would be a good time to... you can watch it from beginning to end. And there's so many things that we talk about on this show that you can't because it's just one season. Or it's just a movie or something. So here's something that if you're looking for a nice show that's actually really good for all ages, because that's something we haven't mentioned lately, is that this is really such a good show for anyone of any age. I've heard a lot of people talking about their kids, like little kids watching it. And it's hard to find really good family shows. And this is definitely one of them. You can definitely show this to a young kid and they won't get too freaked out or scared. But you as an adult can enjoy it as well. So sit down with a family or just yourself, whatever. You can binge it all over. Maybe not one weekend, but you can certainly binge.
All right. And that's about all the time that we have for Nerd of the Third Power this week. Thank you to those for tuning in. Come back next week where we discuss Dungeons and Dragons, something that I'm kind of surprised we've never actually talked about on the show before. So, yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. And so, yeah, we will see you next week. Thank you as always for tuning in. As always, I'm Dr. Gonzo.
I'm the cat.
We'll see you next week. Taka, play us out.